With the captain's chair here?
No, I'm sorry.
So, did everybody do their... What, did you complete the...
No.
Oh, you didn't do it?
I can't even like get to it. I also asked him to resend it to another rep, like, when I do it, but...
Okay, can you upload that to you?
Yeah, I'll just go to the...
Alright, sure.
It was going to some PowerPoint, and then I was trying to click the one that it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't open.
Okay.
And then I couldn't set up PowerPoint.
Alright. So, Tina, you'll help her with that?
Thanks.
So you got Deb Jacko, yes. We have Tina's in color. We have Aaron. Deb. I'll give you hers.
And Michelle already got me hers, so.
Great. Excellent. And I have Melissa's already as well. She didn't get that last year. So, we just have to get you squared away. Tina's going to help you with that. And... Great. So, everybody has the reflective functioning manual. Everybody read it. So we can entertain some questions. So, what's that? Oh, you're going to erase the board? Guess who you're raising? You know, I couldn't find a eraser this afternoon, so that's exactly what I used.
It works.
When I had other stuff on there.
It's mediational moderation.
So anyway, for today, you're supposed to read the manual, and we were going to break down the session into 150-word blocks. Is that what we're going to do?
I did that.
You did it?
Yeah.
Okay, and so you're going to tell them where to put the lines? Okay.
And I made copies of like my coding for it.
All right. I've been kind of... You sent me a copy?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've been... I taught this morning, I taught this afternoon, I had two meetings over lunch. So, it's been quite a day.
Okay, I'm used to coding AI, so I don't want this to be the end all.
No, this is the end all. Wait. No. I'd like them to struggle with this a little bit.
Okay.
So, okay, good. Yeah, let's not do that. But we will give them the places where you did the counting. So we can do that right now, actually. So everybody print out your session. But typically, I know I think it's a notepad, but what you would do is actually, if you try to click on it, Microsoft should give you a message that says, what program do you want to open this with?
Yeah.
And then you click on Word.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it should open in Word.
Okay.
All right. Oh, I didn't send you a copy?
My email's been almost
up, so I'm just taking it. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I was talking about the transcript.
Oh.
You got this?
No.
Yeah. Okay, you printed it out?
I don't know how to print it out. I don't know what
I was. Oh, okay. Well, you guys aren't going to be coding,
yeah,
but I thought you wanted to follow along, and you had mentioned that last week, and
yeah,
you wanted to kind of follow along, and so you have to print it out,
okay,
and then Deb is going to break up the transcript into 150 word chunks.
Except the one that I did the first time, the one looks different.
Looks different. This is the one that I sent out last
week.
You sent
me the and this was the first one of the ones that you sent me. You didn't send me the data. You sent me about 10. So this is the one that I did.
Well, this would come up before that
one. I think I got it.
Yeah, let's do that. Why don't you make copies for everybody? Now here, if you look at this, this is the all the files, the practice files. Which one comes first? It's T0101. That's the one I sent out to everybody, right? Okay, so I don't know what happened. So here's what happens. So you double click on it, right? And then you get this message that says open with, and I just click on Microsoft Word and I click on OK and it opens right up. All right. So did anybody read through the transcript? Okay, that's good, because obviously it would have been a waste of time. So what kind of questions do you guys have about the manual?
More about mental patients in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, no reflective functioning is really a lack of an opportunity to code reflective functioning. So it's a case where it would be not applicable. It's just not, like if I'm not using feeling words, I feel this, or I think that, or I believe that, or I want that. If I'm not even using language like that, you wouldn't code RF.
Mm-hmm.
You have to use that kind of language, intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
to even consider RF. And then there's quality of RF, poor RF, moderate RF, high RF. You know, and then we talk about quality of it, but there's going to be plenty of times when you're going to read a 150-word block, and there's going to, not going to be anything to code. You just put NA. Like if you see here, this is Deb's scoring sheet for the transcript that she's going to be sending out or copying right now. The transcript that I sent to you is not the one that Deb coded, so she's actually making copies of the one that she coded. So just want to let you know. So this is what it looks like. So there were 56 150 word chunks, and you'll see here just some NAs scattered throughout. Those are 150 word chunks that just can't be coded because there's no intentionality in the speaker. So, in fact, there's, you know, that's four 150 word blocks. That's 600 words where nobody, there's no reflective functioning going on. So you just put NA. But where there is reflective functioning, that's what you're going to be coding. So, is it poor? Is it moderate? Is it high? Those kinds of issues are what you're going to be deliberating in your minds as we go along. So for this particular session, there are 56 150 word chunks. The last chunk of words was 44. We're not going to code any leftovers. There were, according to her, there were 11 non-applicables, 11 out of 56. That's like one quarter of the transcript isn't even codable. Makes it easier for you guys. And then she added up the total scores, the total of the scores. And subtracted, I'm trying to figure out what she did here. All right, there are 45 codable word chunks. And she divided 131.5, the total, divided by 34. I don't know where she got 34. I have to ask her that. But the overall RF then was 3. I'll have to ask her about that. But that's essentially what you're doing. In an Excel spreadsheet, you're going to give me the codes and or the scores, and then the number of rows is going to vary depending on the number of word chunks. Mm-hmm. So this particular transcript had 56 word chunks, so the rows would be 1 to 56, right? But next week it could be 44, mm-hmm. So it'd be 1 to 44. So the number of rows is going to vary. But you always have one column, and that's your scores. All right? Any questions about that? Straightforward? All right. So what kinds of questions? I feel like I'm monopolizing the whole thing here. What kinds of questions did you have about the manual as you're reading it? I know it's a lot to digest, given the fact that it's 46 pages long and single-spaced. You know, the first part of it is from pages 1 to 14 are the literature review of RF. And then there's some illustrations of moderate to high RF and illustrations of low RF, and there's the actual scale. And, so it wasn't all, it's not all about the coding system. Some of it's lit review. But anyway, what kinds of questions you guys have? I see people
deeply buried in their laptops.
I'm taking notes to read more and I don't know, but I can send them out.
You can what?
I can send them out. Oh,
send your notes out?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you can do that if you want.
I didn't print it, I just left it on my laptop. Someone at the manual right now.
Okay. So what kind of notes did you take? Oh, okay. I thought you meant you took notes when you read this. Oh, okay. All right. I misunderstood. But see, that's why I do podcasts. That's true. Yeah, I don't know how to solve that unless you want to take notes. But that's the whole reason why I'm podcasting,
yeah.
You know. So, what questions do people have? Aaron?
I guess, I'm seeing to see if it will work itself out as we do some of these together, but as some of it seems pretty nuanced, like being able to tell kind of the difference between a 5 or a 7, or, you know, it seems like a 7, but you could not pretend on 5 because it was,
Well, that's, you know, that kind of, those kinds of questions are what we're going to be training on. So that we all see a particular block of words in the same way. That we all code in the same way. We see things, we're like, we do a mind meld on each other, and we're all seeing things the same way. That's what being part of a coding team is, to kind of see everything the same way, and when we don't, talk about why we don't see things the same way. And usually in coding teams, we've got people, you know, actually fisticuffs break out because people want to argue for a 5 versus a 7. So it becomes very exciting after a while, all the fighting that happens. So we were just talking about the structure of the Excel spreadsheets that they're going to be sending me and how it should look like this, and, you know, and any questions they have about the instruction manual, the coding manual. Oh, you found a stapler. Oh, I see. Okay, I thought that was staple. There used to be a stapler in the computer lab, but it got jammed somehow. So I just had a question for you. Would you like to figure here?
So, I think
so that should be 45. So this person actually is less than 3. Oh, 45. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. All right. So that was the only thing I didn't understand. Okay. So what? We'll just go over the scoring sheet here. So you'll do this in a nice, neat way on your Excel spreadsheet. And as I said, the rows are going to vary depending upon the number of word blocks in your transcript. And after you, and some of them are going to have NA, there's no reflective function in the code, then you're going to calculate the number of codable word blocks. So how do you do that? Well, it's the total number of word blocks minus the uncodable ones, the non-applicable. So in this case, in the transcript that we're going to be looking at today, There are 56 word blocks. 11 of them were NA. If you count up the number of word blocks with NA, there are 11. 56 minus 11 is 45. So, or 40. Yeah, 45. So there are 45 codable word chunks. Then you add up, and there are programs in Excel where you can just add up the number, right? I mean, NA might ruin it, right? How did you do it? By hand. Even if there's NAs every now and then in the column? All right, so would you take that on as a project? And then you could report back to all of us. So we'll have Excel add up the total RF. And then you're going to you can do this by with a calculator, okay? Divide the total RF by the number of codable word chunks. So in this case, the number of codable word chunks is 45. So it's 131.5 divided by 45, and that gives you your overall RF. Yeah. It'd be nice though if we could use Excel. It would save people a lot of time. So you're going to work on that problem. Okay. So does that make sense? And then you email it to me the night before we meet, by 10 p.m. All right. And then what I do is I copy and paste your scoring sheets into an SPSS file, and then I'm going to print out everybody's scores, and we can look who has the high score, who has the low score, who's kind of in the middle. And then what I like to do is like to encourage the high scores and the low scores to duke it out, and we can usually we come right in the middle. But we want people to basically, give essentially the same score. Everybody's giving the same scores. Of course, you have to do this independently of each other. You can't, Michelle can't email Aaron and say, oh, what'd you get for this one? You can't do that. So, and it's a learning experience, Typically, I run a lot of these coding teams, and typically, one person is way out in left field, and everybody else sees it the same way, but one person doesn't, that's fine. That other person will gradually come back into the fold. So if you're that one person who's out there in left field, please don't worry about it. We still want you on the team. So, what did you want to add? Anything to that?
Just with the counting again, easier to break it up. Before I said to break it up into numbers, but for me, I mean, for me, this time it was even quicker breaking up into 50s. So I'm like 50, 100, and then once it's at 150, I circle, let's say it was like the first, you'll see on the paper, the first 150 word block, I circle the one.
We're going to go along, and there are going to be slight discrepancies in that. It's not going to matter all that much, but we do want to try to make it as accurate as possible.
Yeah, I would just say maybe.
If you guys are both using the same transcript and you see that on page 5, your 150 word mark is like 2 words conflict, I don't know how big of a difference that would be.
It's not going to be that big of a difference.
I sometimes, like with this one, you just don't try to make yourself crazy. Like, it's 150 words, but
didn't Melissa have the idea last week that you could actually?
She was going to play.
You could highlight certain portion of text and then do word count to count the words?
Well, you would have to format it first.
Yes. Why don't you go over that?
Formatting. So that would save time, I think. Basically, I don't know. For me, I just, it's like, I'm so used to doing it manually that I don't trust the computer as much as, but it would save a lot of time. So to do it, to code it.
Actually, I might have you do that.
Do you?
The formatting for that.
Sure.
Like, damn it.
Yeah.
They do their own counting, but if you could format the...
Yeah. Yeah. So how would it work then? They have the transcripts.
Well, you're going to be sending out, or actually, they're going to be sending out the transcripts. So maybe they need to learn how to format.
Okay, I can teach you guys. This works great. It's so easy.
That's why she's so thrilled that she's giving the job to you.
I'm all smiles. I have to do it for. I have my own stuff. I can print out this piece of paper that has the coding format that the one of the guys who does the computerized version showed me. But basically, like every time you see a P, every time it's a P of T, you delete that. Because that would count as a word.
P stands for patient, T stands for therapist, and they usually come at the beginning. You know, these transcripts are from another lab that we're training on, so it's not the, these aren't the transcripts that we're actually going to be coding for real. But as you can see, P2 and P1, in this case, P2 is the therapist and P1 is the patient. I don't know why they did that, but you have to delete each one of those references to P2 and P1.
Now, the thing that I don't know if Microsoft Word would pick up is breaking the apostrophe words,
I think they count it as one word.
And it's two.
It is two? According to Mergenthaler?
Yeah, he said to make it.
If it's an I am, you want to put a space in between.
But that's for the computerized. If we're just doing manualized, we can all agree what one word is. If we want to agree that don't is one word, that's good. That's fine. As long as we agree on the same rules for the manual.
Right.
See, because the CRF, you're not coding in 150 word chunks, right?
Right.
So it doesn't matter for CRF. Right. So that's separate.
Okay.
So if we want to make a rule that contraction words are one word, that's fine. We can make that rule.
That's not that hard.
Word says don't, I mean, somebody who has Word open, maybe you can type in don't and then highlight it and then click on word count and see if that's one or two words. I'm pretty sure it's one word.
One?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we can make that rule.
Okay. But actually, it's pretty, what you guys have to do is just you take out the P's, you take out the T's. And the transcripts that you have on that, they have these number markers. You take that out, you know, back to count. I'll look over it. Mostly it was the, mostly there was those three. Size, right. Yeah, you take that out.
Yeah, any kind of comments from the transcriber.
I can look through.
Look at the email again, but one of them I can just send it to you. But those are the three most important. Basically, just anything that's not a word that the patient and there is said, right?
Yeah, I guess we're going to do
that. I guess so, because, yeah.
That is a case where you would want it to be comparable to the CRF coding.
Right.
You wouldn't want therapist comments not to be included in one coding, but then to be included in another different coding. I think we should be uniform with Mergenthaler's lab, at least on that.
Okay.
On that thing.
So then, yeah, everything that's just not a word that the therapist or patient said, those PSTs, numbers, parentheses, you take out. Because basically, we just want to code words that have been said in the room. You know, like the No, that's space. Yeah. I mean, anything that's spoken, space. But for kind of space, like patient size, you know, like that.
Yeah, we're trying to sanitize these transcripts so that it's easier for the coders to calculate the word blocks.
And actually, that would make counting a lot quicker too.
Right, because you can just then you can just highlight the entire document,
right.
And or portions of it, sections of it, and write down the number of words. Right? I think it would be easier than just counting each word laboriously.
I can hate the people who interrupt you.
Counting, please stay away. Radioactive. So is that clear? Everybody understand what we're doing as far as that's concerned?
Do you have any general questions about the manual?
I've been trying for the last 45 minutes to get something. I'm not getting much.
Is it confusing?
It's like a manual that you can't just read once and you're like, oh, I get this. I'm still learning to get this, but I look at it all the time. I mean, what I said in the beginning, like, when I think of this reflective statement, I know I'm going to go towards the fours. But I still can't tell you what exactly I think it is. And it helps to know what you think it is because it helps with the overall RF. But you don't have to send us the other scores, right? Just the RF scores.
Well, your score is the score of each word block.
Right.
And then the overall RF.
But not like the 4.14, not the subsection.
No. Although, you don't send me that, but you should have notes and justify what kind of RF you're coding. Remember we talked about the four categories of RF last week? Yeah.
So those four categories basically just, when you see in the manual, they break up what different kind of four it is, whether it's the relationship with the interviewer, you know, it just breaks up. It puts your eye to where you need to be. You have like a general view to it, and then you can know, then you can look at the manual or look for the cheat sheet once you get familiar with what it's actually standing for.
So there are two concepts here. One is the type of RF that's being demonstrated by the speaker. And then there's the rating of it on a quantitative scale. That's ultimately what we're using to code RF, the quantitative scale from -1 to 9, right? That's the important part, the most important part. But for the purpose of training, I want to make sure that people can back up their RF code with the type of RF, one of the four categories. That's not going to be used in the coding, but as we're training, I want people to be able to recognize different kinds of RF in the transcripts as they're reading them through.
Just making sure that you can give like all the codes.
By the way, I wanted to make an announcement that someone in our midst was just officially certified as an RF coder by none other than Howard Steele.
Thank you, I'm excited about that.
I just found out the news yesterday, so she's an official. I'm not. I attended the coding. I didn't do the reliability training, but you went through the whole experience.
Yeah.
And you know, you did this over the summer. It was an incredible amount of work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and now people can contact you to code AAIs for RF.
Yeah.
Should be maybe a little bit of a money maker for you. So we're excited about that for Deb, and that means we have an official coder. coder in our midst who's going to be helping to teach everybody how to apply this coding system to these therapy transcripts, which is a type of data that Deb did not learn the coding system on, but we're adapting it to this particular kind of data, therapy transcript data. So that was exciting. Deb?
Could we try with our chunks together?
Yes, we will. We're definitely going to do that. I just want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to ask questions about the manual in general before we move on to coding chunks. You know, Peter Feinicke must be one of the greatest writers of all time. He writes so clearly, you never have any questions. And it's just like, it just seeps in and you instantly understand.
Yeah,
it's really, that guy is a genius anyway, but, you know, this just proves it. So let me give you a little quiz. What's disavowal of RF?
Or what's actually going to be? Where's mods or six? It's not disavowal of RF. It's like not showing electrical functioning. So it would be in the sixes.
When you say sixes, you mean where it is in the manual?
Yeah.
Okay, I want them to be thinking about like what category of RF, like developmental aspects or.
Oh, I see. Because like when I know it's lack of reflective function, I know that it's in the six area, which tells me it's lower.
Okay. I think if we throw a bunch of numbers around, I think
yeah.
Why don't we call it? It's either negative or limited RF.
Okay.
What's negative RF? Negative 1 or 0, right? That's really, really low. Or limited RF would be like a 1. So when you disavow RF, you're saying, you know, I don't know how my parents affected me. How should I know? You're disavowing the capacity to reflect on that question. So that's, yeah, so. What Deb means when she says six means that under section six of the manual, Feinicke has several illustrations of negative or limited RF. So it's not a number six like that's the score that you should get. That's not what Deb meant.
Well, I definitely walked away with the wrong
message. Yeah. So let's not use the numbers of the sections. Okay. Or you can say section six. All right. I can just flip around and ask questions, see if you guys seem to know it all, right? Right?
I think it's all the other things that we just don't get enough people to learn questions.
Okay.
I'd have to go through
each section a little bit. Yeah, why don't you give a little tutorial? Since you're the official color.
So we spoke about it a little last week, the 4.1, the section 4.1, that's I guess where I can start. So that's it's on my page 19. I don't know if you guys have the same page numbers, but if we can open it together.
It's formatted differently. Okay. It's page 15 of the manual that I sent you. It should start with 4.1, awareness of the nature of mental states. Is that what everybody has? You know, for training purposes, it might be helpful if you opened up and printed out the copy that I sent everybody, rather than that.
Okay. I don't know if I have the copy that you sent me, too.
Yeah. They're identical. That's what Howard gave you.
Yeah. So 4.1, awareness of the nature of mental states. So I'll just read the first line and then I'll explain. But it's the readers are asked to note the interviewee's awareness of the characteristics of mental states in themselves and in others by making references to one of the characteristics of mental states. So if you look, it's the examples are really helpful for me because sometimes it kind of just jumbles up without the examples I found. So the bigness of mental states.
So there's under 4.1, 4.1, Fonagy gives five different subcategories of this overarching category awareness of the nature of mental states. So there are five subcategories. The first one is opaqueness of mental states. And we talked about that a little bit last week, remember? Like, I'm looking at Erin right now, and I can guess that she's bored. But I don't know what's in her mind. She might be, like, so excited about the stuff that she's barely able to contain herself in her seat. I don't know. Ultimately, I don't know. I can only make an educated guess based on, you know, body language or whatever. But I don't really truly know what's in her head. That's opaqueness of mental states. So that's the first subcategory of this overarching category, awareness of the nature of mental state, which is one of four overarching categories of reflective function.
And it kind of has to be a little bit specific. You can't just say, I don't know what she thinks. Or, you know, it kind of has to be, you get the sense that the person isn't quite sure what the other person is thinking, and they might be thinking something else.
Let me give you an example in a therapeutic context, because that's what we're coding. We're not coding AI, which is what this instrument was originally designed to score, to rate. Patient says to a therapist, "You hate me. I know you hate me." Therapist says, "Well, how do you know that I hate you?" "I just know. I know you hate me." Is there any kind of opaqueness of mental states there? None, right? In that patient's mind, he or she absolutely, positively knows the therapist's mind, and he or she knows that the therapist hates him or her. There's no understanding that I could be wrong, that I really don't know what's in the therapist's mind, ultimately. I really don't. There's no awareness of that. So that would, you would then give a very low score on a response like that. What kind of a score would you give?
For a response like that?
Yeah.
I would probably.
I was thinking one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, does that help just with that one example? Okay. So, if we go through, maybe I could, like, on the fly, think of therapeutic examples.
I think it's helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
So, then the next one, 4.1.2, mental state is susceptible to disguise. It's related also to opaqueness, but it's kind of giving the sense that somebody who the patient's talking about may have felt something else without being explicitly said. So the example they give is, I'm so angry at her, but I would never show that to her. My mother always kept everything controlled and calm, but I think underneath she often felt very angry.
By the way, the numbers in parentheses after the example is an actual score that Fonagy would give to that particular little piece of transcript. So let's say patient says, you know, you're smiling at me right now, but I know underneath it you don't like me very much. You're smiling, but underneath it I know what you really feel. You don't really care for me very much. It actually shows a fair amount of reflective functioning, right? It shows this mental state is susceptible to disguise. So even though the person's really wrong, right, it shows some awareness that one mental state can disguise another. So smiling and pretending to be happy can disguise a mental state of sadness or depression. Or vice versa. Let's say that I have a competitor or a colleague I don't like, and I find out that, and I'm in a meeting, let's say, and I find out that person was in a car accident. And so I'm in the media, and I go, oh, that's so terrible. But inside, I'm thrilled because I don't like the person. So that would be the other way around, where I'm using sadness to mask or disguise a feeling, you know, happiness or what's the word? Schadenfreude, exactly. I'm taking pleasure in somebody else's pain, but I can't show that because then I look like a jerk. So I'm going to just pretend to be sad when actually I'm feeling Schadenfreude inside. So people understanding that kind of RF? Okay.
And I found like sometimes people will say, "Oh, I'm
Yeah, I know, it's so different from the coding that you've been doing all summer. Yeah.
So you should also be careful of like double score.
Right.
And then if you're going to put it off on the second.
Yeah, if they're going to be reflective, they'll shine through, and if they're not.
Yeah, and in a 150 word block, there might be several instances of RF going on. Mm-hmm. But we're only coding the high. I think we're coding the high, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what Joseph did?
Yeah.
So we're coding the highest example of RF within the 150 word block.
It's like in this example, it's like they put they decided on the four even before the rest of that the mother kept it hidden
when they needed to edit. Right. Well, with AIs, they do so many different codes for each
one.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's helpful and sometimes it's complicated. With AIs, it's just different because each question is so focused. The answer is pretty focused on the question. And sometimes with a session, the patient could be talking about something else after it runs out. It's different.
So that's one rule. Highest RF within 150 word block. Mm-hmm.
And
just Joseph. Make sure Joseph said that. I just want to make
yeah,
sure.
Double check.
Okay.
And what we said last week also, it's okay if we're not out of the room. It's really not.
Yeah, when you were out of the room, I showed them your coding sheet, and you see how many not applicables. And you add those up at the end and subtract from the total number of word chunks to give you your codable word chunks, which you're going to divide. Used to divide the sum RF width to get an average RF for the session. We might also want to consider doing something with the high RF of every session, but we can talk about that later.
Okay. So 4.13, recognition of the limitations on that site. An example that they give is, I had a lot of respect for my mother, although sometimes she infuriated me because she was a very anxious person, and she would get very uptight about things and sometimes get a little bit hysterical. I think she was very insecure in her relationship with my father, but I don't know if that was true. I had a real go at her, but I think I was just worried that she didn't care about me. That's really reflective to know that, you know, maybe the mother wasn't actually feeling what she's presenting.
Yeah, the question here is, what makes it recognition of limitations on insight is this statement, but I don't know if that was true. Mm-hmm. So you're actually admitting your knowledge base is not infallible. You're fallible. You don't know. It's related a little bit to opaqueness of mental states, right? These are all related to each other. But it's more explicit about the limitations on your insight into the other person. Now, I think she was very insecure, but I don't really know for sure. I had a real go at her. These are from British AAIs. So I had a real go at her. I mean, I was fighting with her a lot, but I think I was just frightened that she didn't care about me. So now I'm thinking about, in hindsight, why was I always fighting with this person? Because I was afraid. It made me angry. So I didn't have the awareness that I do now about what was going on with me emotionally when I was fighting with my mother. Was it mother? Father. So you see again the limitations on the insight there. And 414.
Mental states tied to expressions of appropriate moment of judgments. So it's indicating like there's another response to what was going on. So for example, they said I started staying out at night and he became quite authoritarian, like fathers do. But I think all fathers get anxious about their daughters and they sort of start rebelling.
Now cue there is I think all fathers. So she's contextualizing her father's behavior in a whole group of, you know, a class of fathers who are engaging in what she would consider to be normative behavior. This is behavior every father would act this way. So that's an awareness that mental states are tied to expressions of appropriate normative judgments. And the one later on, it was understandable that my mother would feel jealous of me because of my close relationship with my father. What makes that normative judgment? It was understandable, meaning most people would pretty much consensually agree that my mother would feel jealous in that situation. So that's a form of reflective function.
And with this one, there's like a sense of forgiveness when they're talking about mm-hmm. I get why my mom and my dad did it. Because sometimes you'll see people will say the opposite, that they don't understand a certain rule, or there's no sense of, or there's a very little sense of why certain punishments occurred or something like that. So the last one in this section is awareness of the defensive nature of certain mental states. So this is, the example is you tend to blank out things that make you unhappy sometimes. So kind of understanding, you know, how certain feelings can make you just not want to talk about it, but it has to be a spoken thing. If you think the patient isn't talking about something because they don't want to talk about it, that doesn't count. They have to specifically say,
I don't want to talk about this because it's making me really upset right now. That's reflective. They know something about themselves and how they act when they're upset. I don't want to, or if they just don't talk, you might infer that they're upset or they're stressed out or something, but that doesn't show any reflective functioning then. It shows the reflective functioning in you, the coder. And that's how, we're not coding you, we're coding the patient.
Do you guys have any questions?
That's the first category of RF. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you have these, like it helps me still to hear these examples. You have it in your head, so you think it kind of just sets something off of, oh, this sounds like this. It's a lot easier to hear the examples.
So, 4.2.
4.2. The explicit effort to tease out mental states underlying behavior. So this is also in the moderate to high range. And the speakers identify possible mental states which may account for their behavior. scheme and offer accurate or plausible links between mental states and behaviors of the self and others. So for example, the first one, 4.21, accurate attributions of mental states to others. They make a link between mental states and behaviors. So in this example...
I meant, if you guys, most of you, or some of you were at the faculty research showcase today, and I actually talked about that, what the definition of mentalization, and that is the definition, attributing underlying mental states to behaviors that you see. So it's the ability to interpret behaviors as being connected to underlying mental states. And this 4.2 category really captures that definition.
So their example is the definition. Mom would say, wait till your dad comes home, let him with all of us. But you know, I think he felt glad to do that because he knew that she had to be with us all day. You know, he had to back her up. That's reflective because the flip side would be he has to be with us, or,
Well, even that shows a little bit of reflective functioning. He just beat us. I don't know why he beat us. He just beat us.
Mm-hmm.
He just felt like it. He beat us. That's a little bit different. He beat us because he felt he had to do that, because he knew that she had to be with us all day. He felt he had to back her up. There's a lot of reflection there going on. And the score is either a 6 or a 7. That's how high it is on a scale of -1 to 9. But what we want to emphasize here is that that's the type of mental or reflective functioning that illustrates 4.2.1. You're not coding these categories, but I want you to be thinking in terms of the categories.
So the other example would also be BRF, but it would just be a much lower score than,
Exactly. So he just beat us. I don't know why, he just beat us. That would be like a 0. I don't even think it would be a 1. I don't think it would be a -1, because it's not bizarre. It's not hostile, but it's just 0.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what would be considered a 9? That is so rare.
Yeah, I think one of the shortcomings of Fonagy's rating scale is that, technically it's a scale from -1 to 9, but in my experience, I don't know, you went through the training and such, I mean, very rarely would you assign an 8 or a 9. So it's really it's a scale from -1 to 7. An 8 or a 9 is a very, very rare occurrence. Now, Fonagy does have some examples of 8 or 9s, but, maybe I don't have the RF ability to distinguish.
I mean, a 5 is really, really reflective. So I don't know.
We want to maintain the possibility of an 8 or 9, but I know this sample well enough to know that, it's not going to be happening. But, if you see it, be courageous and put down an 8 or a 9 if you really feel that it deserves it. And the anchor points are in the back of the manual, and you look at the anchor points, and if the anchor points match up with what you're reading, hey, give it an 8 or a 9. I'm not going to stop you. But I just know that it's going to be a rare occurrence, not only because I think that 8 or 9, 8s and 9s are just very, very, it's very complex, but also I know the sample that we're coding. So, when you went through your 15 AAIs, did you have any examples of 8s or 9s? Really? No 6s? No 7s?
Okay.
4.5.
No, not
a 5. Wow. I had someone give me an AAI, and I had it scored, and mine was a 6.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I was so disappointed.
Oh my gosh.
I wanted a 9.
Sixes.
So, Good deal. I don't know. I need more RF. So that's 4.2.1.
4.2.2 is pretty similar. It's when the affect, the person is aware that the affect is not consistent with the situation. So the example they said they give is, I'm looking after my daughter for 3 weeks, and it's on finding it very hard, but I'm only finding it hard because I'm a bit unhappy with certain other aspects of my life at the moment. What was my career? We moved into a new house, and mom and dad were disappointed because I hated my new room. It was bigger and lighter than the living room and street X. So she understands, or he understands, you know, that she feels unhappy, but it's not really about the situation. It's about the particular situation, it's about yourself that's going on. And she was able to say that.
Right, so I might be feeling sad because of an argument I had with somebody, but I'm at a birthday party, and you know, one would expect me to be happy at a birthday party, but I'm not feeling that way because I'm thinking about something else. So the observable aspects is that I'm at a birthday party. Observably, I should be happy, but I'm not because I'm thinking about something else that happened earlier today.
You can even say, like, you took a test, and then you felt stressed about it, and then you got into a fight. You know, your distress might be because of the test. As long as they say it, they don't have to explicitly say it. Sometimes it's kind of like underneath the words, or you kind of think that they, but it really has to be like in the words. Like, this person said it pretty explicitly. I'm only finding it hard because. Really shows that this is what she's feeling. 4.23, recognition of diverse perspectives. The speaker explicitly acknowledges that different people may perceive a given behavior or situation differently. So my mother had the habit of lifting her hand in sadness when we were naughty, or when she thought that we were naughty. So
maybe we weren't naughty, but she thought we were, and so she'd slap us. It's subtle, but it's important. This particular subcategory is related to theory of mind tasks. How many of you guys are familiar with theory of mind tasks? Right. So you want to mention one of them?
I'm trying to remember what evidence we started looking at this, but the name was where you show a child. The Sally test, I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're like, okay, Sally. I'm trying to get out of it. Sally puts something under like a basket or in a box, and then leaves the room, and then somebody moves the marble over to a different box while she's not there. When she comes back in, which box is she going to think it's in?
Exactly.
And if they can memorialize something,
yeah.
I think that it's...
So if someone doesn't have theory of mind, they're going to guess the... place where the marble is currently, rather than the place where the marble used to be before it was moved. Right? So that is recognition of diverse perspectives, right? If you can say, well, Sally would think that it's still under, you know, box A, that person's able to take on Sally's perspective. From Sally's perspective, the marble is still in box A. So you're able to suspend your own knowledge. You know that it's under box B.
I think like what you had on the ground in transcripts, you'd say, or
absolutely.
Then it could be box, but it's actually a cow, so it's could be.
Exactly. So, yeah, I put a cow inside a house. And so you ask the little boy, or you ask the respondent, you know, what do you think's in a house? And they'll say usually utensils, beds, food, and then you open up the house and you show them there's a cow inside. Close up the house again. Then you take a doll, same gender as the child you're interviewing, and the doll comes up, and you ask the child, okay, what does the doll, the boy doll, think is in the house? And if they say a cow, that means they don't have theory of mind. They can't assume that the boy doesn't know what's inside. So it's diverse perspectives, right? The boy thinks there's utensils inside. The respondent thinks there's a cow inside. And to hold those two discrepant views simultaneously is what theory of mind is all about. So this really gets at the traditional definition of theory of mind, diversity of perspective.
The next one is pretty similar too. It's how a person might be asserting how he or she is feeling things in a situation, and they're aware that they might not be thinking of it in the way that actually did. So the quote is, I saw him as the heat, he came up here and wait, but actually I was very angry with him at the time because of the way he treated my mother, so perhaps that's why.
Now, what's that defense mechanism called? This person is identifying his or her own defense mechanism. What would you call it?
Projection.
Projection. Yeah. I saw you as behaving in an uncaring way because I was angry at the time. So I'm projecting my angry, uncaring feelings onto you, and so now I perceive you as being the uncaring, perhaps angry one. That's projection. So this person is interpreting his or her own use of projection. It's pretty high level, gets a 6. So taking into account one's own mental state and interpreting others' behavior. So if I'm interpreting your behavior, I have to think about how I'm feeling, my countertransference, so to speak. Right?
I think yeah. 6-7.
Yeah, the actual anchor points are in the back of the manual, and we'll get to that. We'll get to that at some point. I just want you to kind of think about where a score might fall, just kind of anecdotally right now as we're talking. Let's finish up at 4.2 and then we'll be done.
4.25, evaluating interstates from the point of view of their impact on behavior of self and or other. So the underlying the word might. So speakers recognize the role their own mental states might impact on behaviors of the self and other. So this is more explicit. So it's for, because I think perhaps I was insecure, a very demanding child that needed a lot of attention, I obviously upset her by being so demanding and crying whenever she went out. So this person knew that maybe she was reacting because she was insecure. And that's what set the stage. But she knew that her feelings were coloring the situation.
So like in a therapy setting, I was pretty rough with you in the previous session. I think that's why you accidentally charged me more for my session today. See the connection? I could be wrong, but I think that maybe the reason why you made a mistake and charged me more for the session is that I really mistreated you last week's session.
4.26, taking into account what they have received from me. So people always think of me as nice, but really, are really insecure. So it's taking into account how others perceive and how you perceive yourself, which is also kind of the idea of mentalization. 4.27, perfectionist would recall thinking about mental states. This one kind of,
it's a little more subjective, I think.
Yeah. I think you could use this a lot, or you could really see how it has to be really freshly in this patient's mind. Like, for example, if I still feel the same way about him dying, it kind of brings it to the current feelings and situations. But now, as I think about it, I realize it's like bringing it into the room right now.
It's like an aha moment, like an epiphany.
Yeah.
Like if a patient is talking and they're making connections and, oh, yeah, now that I think about it, I'm realizing that maybe my mother didn't hate me when she did X, Y, and Z. But really she was so stressed out at work that she had no other outlet for her anger. Something like that. So there's some kind of epiphany or freshness of insight that goes on at the moment in the therapy session with the therapist, you know, talking about some issue. That would be a freshness of recall or thinking about mental states. So, for next week, we're going to have you insert the word blocks for this session.
P06022P1.
Oh, you have him. Okay,
yeah.
Great. And so let's do this. Why don't people just, and there are, let's see, 56 blocks?
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Why don't we have people try coding, just for the hell of it, the first 28. All right. Now, I want you to write down two. Don't send me any scores. We're just playing around now. You want to write down two scores for every 150 word block. You want to write down the type of RF, right? So whether it's 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, 4.4, that's not a rating. That's just telling you the section in the coding manual that you're referring to. And I want you to also assign a quantitative rating. The quantitative ratings are in the back of the manual. So on page 40, at the bottom, it says guidelines for rating identified passages. All right. And that goes until 43. And then there's just a chart. It's like a quick chart on pages 44 to 46 about coding. So just look through that and try to assign a quantitative rating for each 150-word block. Now, there might be more than one instance of RF in a 150-word block. We're coding the highest example of RF within that 150-word block. So you're going to have the 150-word block number from 1 to 28. You're going to have the category number 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, or 4.4 listed, and then you're going to have a actual rating from negative 1 to 9, whatever you choose, for each 150-word block. For next week.
Well, I want to make sure that they have pages 21 to 24, because for some reason
I have up to 25.
Yeah.
Everybody have up to page 25?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Everybody understand what we're doing? Clear? Tina says it's clear, so it's clear. All right, thanks for staying a little bit over. I'll see you guys next week. Yes, I'm going to give this to you right now. That's for you. You have a pen? I just have a pencil. Okay, we'll go downstairs. Okay, thank you. All right.
So.
Oh, what conference? What is it? Oh, is Bob, are you going with Bob?
No, it's
Yeah. Okay. Does he know about it? Okay. All right.
But that's why there's a delay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So that's why there's a headline.
Oh, it's no problem. It's no problem. I'm not in any rush. I'm just trying to keep my head above water right now.